As you all probably know, the date changes every spring because the date of Easter is tied to the phase or a phase of the moon, a full moon. In the West, Easter always occurs on the first Sunday after the full moon, on or after the spring equinox. It's a wonderful and ancient tradition. I love it because it ties Easter to God's life-giving power, not just on earth, but throughout the entire cosmos. This really resonates with what a lot of us feel, especially in the West, related to Easter. The days are finally starting to get longer. There is more warmth. And so we bring in a lot of Easter flowers. Aren't they so colorful, especially this year? They're gorgeous, and they really pull out the color in the windows. This is so fitting to associate life, God's life-giving power on earth, throughout the heavens, with Easter and resurrection. When I just walked by myself to get to the service, barely on time, I walked down through the columbarium, All Souls Walk, and I noticed a beautiful, beautiful bouquet of fresh flowers resting on a nameplate where someone's loved one is buried. All of this is fitting and lovely and tender and really resonates with the way in which John's gospel tells the story of Easter. Mary Magdalene goes to the tomb while it's dark. There is this mysterious figure, and she supposes him to be the gardener. That is not exactly right, and it's exactly right. It's an echo of Genesis 1 in the Garden of Eden, and what's going on in the story, in part, is that God is repairing, renewing, recreating the whole of creation into all of human relationships. I love this ancient association of Easter with God's life-giving power everywhere, even in the heavens. Easter, though, is about so much more than God's life-giving power working in and through creation. There is so much more here. You may have heard the expression from the world of carpentry about working with the grain of wood. A carpenter will work with the grain of wood to create a smoother cut. And when one works with the grain of wood, things are easier. But what we see on Easter morning, what we see in this story, is a God who is working against the grain of the hard wood of the cross. God is doing something new and shocking and hard that startles and awakens our perception to God's presence the world over in a fascinating way. This is where the details of Jesus' very death matter, and the details of this resurrection matter. It's more than just life in an abstract and mysterious way working in and through us. No. The particularity of Jesus' death matters. He dies, in the words of Roz or the Acts of the Apostles, on a tree. That author's being a little metaphorical. He dies on a cross. Or to put it more starkly in the words of one of the prayers we read this week, Jesus dies at the hands of an instrument of shameful death. He's executed. And the name Pontius Pilate explains why. Pontius Pilate is the one who makes that decision, and Pontius Pilate is the Roman governor. Jesus dies in the way that thousands of people died, actually, during his day and age, by means of execution at the hands of the Roman emperor, or a foreign state that had imperial control of Israel. And so what we see on Easter morning is God working against the grain of injustice and execution. A part of what resurrection is God working against the grain of human violence, our proclivity to betray one another and turn against one another with sword and other instruments. We also see in this story God going against the grain of human betrayal. So the names of Judas, the names of Peter bring to mind betrayal. Both of them, both of those apostles, betrayed Jesus in their own way. So a part of what Easter is about, a part of what this story is about, this is when the details matter, is God's honesty, truth-telling, forgiveness, and repair are going against the grain of human betrayal. And all of these associations bring to mind that what's going on in part in resurrection is that joy and healing, an ancient association with the resurrection, joy and healing are going against the grain of human pain and grief. We have at St. John's Cathedral trained storytellers who meet with children every Sunday during the program year for Sunday school or for formation. And when they present a story like this one of the questions that they almost always ask is this: I wonder what part of the story is the best part for you. I wonder what part of the story is the best part. How we answer that question, whether you're a child or adult, changes depending on your mood, depending on the course of your life, where you are in your life. But I suspect that for all of us who really feel the story and pay attention to it and try to live it, the best part at some point in our life is how it is that Mary comes to recognize that the gardener is in fact the risen Christ. She comes, and this is only in John's gospel, to the tomb while it's still dark. And that dark is both literal and figurative. And she comes to the tomb in the midst of that darkness, trying to see in her darkness and in and through tears. And she can't recognize what's going on, much less who this figure, this mysterious figure is, until she hears something. And what is the word that she hears? Tell me. Say it again. She hears her name. And what John doesn't tell us, and I like to think that he wants us to imagine, he doesn't tell us if Jesus speaks her name loudly or quietly. We just don't know the tone and the pitch of all of that. But we are certainly invited to imagine that Jesus is speaking her name with a tenderness and a life-giving power that is just unimaginable, because her name is being spoken from the other side of death. This is one of the best parts of the story. This is a part that I think that we can all really relate to. I remember once I was hard at work, and I just had finished a service, and I had another service 2 or 3 hours away, and I had, I think, 4 committee meetings between the two services, and then I was just sort of running and trying to get to the next thing. And someone showed up at the front desk. And I was walking by, so the receptionist asked me to come in, and I said hello, and it was pretty obvious to me that it was someone off the streets. And I was not at my best, but I was trying to be, like, clear and helpful all at once. And I said, listen, I am so sorry, but I can't help you right now. He immediately replied, listen, I'm not here looking for help. My name's Ed. What's your name? And I introduced myself, and he said, listen, I just need somebody to listen for a few minutes. Hearing his name helped me to recognize him in a different light. So we walked into the nave, we sat down, and he told me a few stories, one of which is one of the best stories I've ever heard in my entire life, a wonderful story about a turn of events in a wonderful way with his daughter. At the end, he said, just thanks so much for listening. And in fact, he didn't ask for anything more or less than for someone to hear his story. But for me, it all started with his name, Ed, and an introduction. And I recognized him, and I even recognized myself in an entirely different light. I know there are parts of this story that are so mysterious and transcendent that it's hard to relate to, much less understand. But this part about the name, we can not only understand and relate to, but practice how we say one another's names. And if we say it with a tenderness and a kindness and a love that has something to do with the way in which the risen Christ says Mary's name, that can help us not only recognize one another and ourselves, but it can feel, in the right situation, even like resurrection. Will you be patient with me if I make one last observation or suggestion? Four people said yes. I probably should just sit down, but I'm not. I don't think that Easter or resurrection is so much understood as it is experienced. There's that really odd bit in this story about the beloved disciple and Peter running to the tomb. Did you hear that? And then the beloved disciple outruns Peter, so it sounds like a foot race to Easter, which is just odd, isn't it? I don't know what that's about, and frankly, I really don't care, but it does make me think that if the mind and the heart are headed to Easter, the heart is always going to get there first, and that's just fine, because the mind can always catch up later.